from Phil Goff.
It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
G'day, King of Funk, Phil Goff, how are you going? Yeah.
G'day, that was good music. I was just sitting here enjoying that, thinking...
Getting your groove on.
Yeah, it's about the only time of the day I'll have the chance to listen to any music.
But, oh, look, I'll tell you what, you can tune into BFM non-stop, 24-7.
I could have you playing in the background while I did my work, Mikey. That'd be so relaxing.
You know, do what so many others do. You download the podcasts, you know. You could repeat that song over and over and over. It could be your quiet little song. It could be like your mantra. Your mantra.
It could inspire me and motivate me to get through the day.
Motivate you to get through those emails about Lime scooters. Ooh, so many coming in. So many people love the scooters, Phil.
They do, but name one that wants to be riding along the road doing 20K and suddenly find without warning their front wheel locks, because guess what happens when the front
up and
wheel
over?
Locks? Yeah, up and over.
Up and over before you know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Smash on the smash.
Look, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me, Mikey. There's a wider debate about issues and how you co-use footpaths, etc. But there's one thing that there's no debate over. If you're riding, if you're using any form of vehicle and it does something unexpected that puts your life and well-being at risk, you have a product recall till you sort the problem out.
This is the thing, otherwise we end up with Terminator, don't we?
Well, that's right. You know, I got to say, I was a bit amazed when I read the guy that's the Asia-Pacific boss of Lime saying, look, it's only 155 incidents. That's only 0.0086% of all rides. Yeah, but what if you're one of those 155 and 30 of those people were injured? And I want to know whether I'm driving a car, riding a motorbike, riding a scooter, that I can rely on that vehicle to do what I expect it to do and not suddenly lock up the brakes and throw me over the handlebars and onto the road.
That's not an outlandish expectation, is it?
No, it sounds pretty reasonable to me.
It sounds reasonable because it sounds like the sort of thing when you're concerned about your own safety and the safety of others, that's reasonable, and you would expect those people that operate the scooters to shut that business down until they've sorted it out. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think they should have come to us as soon as they knew they had the problem. And frankly, you know, and I am going to call it naive because I don't think it's malicious, but I think it's a bit naive to think, hey, if we flood the mayor's office with emails, then he'll change his mind about the importance of safety and having a vehicle that does what it's meant to. There's no way that was going to influence the outcome. So it was a bit of a wasted effort. I appreciate that there's a whole lot of people out there that love riding the scooters, and a lot of people still riding scooters though, because you know a lot of people have private scooters, and I want the scooters back on the road, but they'll only come back on the road when we can have assurance and verification that they've fixed a flaw that could end up killing people.
All right, now, Phil, this is going to be I hope you can see how I segue into this. Excuse the use of other
people. It's going to be subtle, is it?
Excuse the use of other... That's a double segue, really, isn't it? Because I'm using now personal transport segue into the segue. So there's 155 incidents that Lime scooter, it's been identified... Don't sit up, Tess. Tess is hanging her head in shame at this one. But there's 155 incidents that you've got hold of the person in charge. You've shut things down until it gets better. Now, I know this is probably more of a central government issue, but we also find out today that New Zealand ranks at the bottom of developed countries on youth mortality rates. And 19 countries, okay? Out of 19 countries, we rate 18th for asthma-related deaths, for poor housing, poor condition, for cold and respiratory deaths. We rate second to worst out of 19 countries out of this. Now, we're in the city that's constantly obsessed by building more homes. We're in the city that's got the highest rents in the country. We're in a city where people are whinging. Landlords are complaining about their capital gain tax like it's just a personal insult to them. And moaning about the fact they've got to get up to spec by 2024. Children are dying. Young people are dying. And the 18th worst we are in the world, according to this recent study, which is an international, it's a British healthcare study, think tank Nuffield Trust, which looked at the UK's record in adolescent health and well-being in relation to 18 countries of similar economic and cultural backgrounds. So that is really bad. That is really bad, and that's more than 155 people, Phil. That's a lot. That's a lot of young New Zealanders and young Aucklanders that are dying because they live in shitty homes that nobody will fix up.
Yeah, and there were two articles in the paper this morning that I think are relevant to the higher standards now being imposed on rental property. One was that youth health and wellbeing figure, and we did really badly on a number of things there. Mortality rates for 10 to 19-year-olds, as well as the asthma mortality rate, as well as
the reason I connected to the Lyme scooters thing, Phil, just before you, before you go on, just so people know why I connected those two, because there's been, like, say, 155 incidents of this scooters tipping over or shutting themselves down mid-flight, and there's and you know that a certain relative amount of ACC claims as well. There's been last year in New Zealand $145 million in ACC claims for respiratory disease. You know, for respiratory illnesses.
And the other article I was going to refer to is the one that says that poor housing is causing preventable injury and disease that's estimated to cost New Zealand up to $164 million a year.
Maybe that's what I'm talking about.
And the hospital admissions as well as
164, ACC. Is it? Right.
Yeah, 164. And that's a lot of money. I frankly didn't have a lot of sympathy for the one or two landlords that came out and said, and actually the opposition, the National Party, that said, this is going to put pressure on landlords and it'll lead to increased rent. I just think it's fundamental that if you're renting out, it's a bit like if you're renting out a scooter, make sure it's safe. If you're renting out a house,
make sure it's safe.
It's fit to live in. Yeah.
And that doesn't say, oh, well, to make our scooters safe, we're going to have to up the price of per ride for everybody. Just make them safe. Otherwise, you don't get to do it.
Yeah, to be fair to landlords, I saw a whole lot of landlords come out and say, hey, that's no problem. This is the sort of stuff that we are doing now anyway.
That's what I mean. The people that are doing it right, it's the people who are arguing the point and saying, oh, well, come on, at least we're giving them somewhere to live.
I just think when you're a low-income family and you're renting at the bottom of the market and your home is wet, mouldy, drafty and unhealthy, you're going to have time off work, your kids are going to have time off school, there's going to be unnecessary illnesses and hospitalisation. That's not the sort of city or country we want to create. Of course we've got to have these minimum standards. You know, that is absolutely fundamental that every kid can grow up in a home that's warm, safe and healthy. And that's just bottom line stuff, I think.
And it's this is the thing. It's all very. I love the way that people are so quick and easy to shut down the scooters when the scooters are causing the trouble. But it's these are people dying.
It's not an either or. It's a both and.
Yeah.
You've got to have basic
safe.
Decent
safe is the same word.
I want to know when I'm using any vehicle on the road that it's safe to use. I want to know that if any family is living in a home, that it's a safe and healthy home for them to live in.
But if you can't do that, then you shouldn't be renting out homes.
No. That's exactly it. And you know, I remember that case last year where this family out in Papakura had several centimetres of water under the house permanently. Because of bad drainage. And then when they complained, they were given eviction notices. I mean, I just thought that's frankly bloody outrageous.
Yeah, well, I was at the house where we've just been maybe I shouldn't say that. Still in discussion. A recent home that I lived in, I was privy to finding out just because the guy turned up on the day just how much insulation there was compared to how much insulation there should have been, and it was a lot less.
We noticed that when we had old insulation and we renewed the insulation, how much difference it made in the warmth of the house and reducing the cost of heating it. And, you know, if you're a tenant, you can't control that. And that's why, you know, I mean, all in favour of the government schemes that have said, look, we will give financial assistance to those to insulate their homes, particularly their rental homes. And, you know, a lot of people took advantage of that, but not everybody did. When you're renting a house, it's not just a commercial transaction. This is how much money I need at the end of the week to meet my costs. But you've actually got a liability there that you are responsible for the health and well-being of the family if the house is not a safe house to live in. You know, and tenants have their responsibilities as well. But I just think I was appalled when I think it was Judith Collins that came out and said, "Oh, you know, this is a bad thing." Sorry, Judith, it's
see
a good
later.
Thing.
Yep.
It's a good thing that people can expect to live in a house that's warm, dry, and healthy.
Otherwise, don't rent it out. Hey, so let's talk about housing. Let's, new consenting data shows the unitary plan is working, Phil, by providing housing options in areas where Aucklanders want to live.
Yep,
with more than 90% of dwellings being consented within Auckland's urban area. Does that mean the houses are going to be built? Does that mean the infrastructure surrounds it already, or the infrastructure needs to be built to make this viable? Does it mean that it's not just housing, it's actually prisons? What does it mean?
There's three things, and there are three records that I'm really proud of in those stats that came out. One, we completed more houses. That means you issue a code compliance certificate. We completed more new houses by the end of last year than have ever been completed in the history of Auckland. Secondly, we issued more building consents than have ever been issued in the history of Auckland. It's just under 13,000 at the moment. And thirdly, that figure you mentioned, 90% of the building consents were in existing urban areas, which means that we're becoming a more compact city. Now, I think that's great, but of course, as you intensify, you've got to make sure that you have your infrastructure in place. And that's why it's so important. You know, we've got worries about the cost of the city rail link, but doubling the capacity of rail so we can bring people in. I was out in South Auckland looking at some new subdivisions, and, you know, if you don't have a decent rail system and people are on the motorway, you're in trouble. I want the government to move as quickly as possible on light rail. I want the government, to bring forward whatever we can, and I see there's a new debate coming out about SkyPath, but at least they've got a date for it. By the end of next year, they will have started construction of a walk and cycle way across the Harbour Bridge. You need all of that infrastructure so that when you have intensification, people still have accessibility and can move around.
So you're confident the infrastructure's there? Or will be there?
It's a big pressure on us, but that's why we've been putting a whole lot of new money and finding new ways of funding infrastructure for housing developments. You know, I was in my old area of Mount Roskill earlier in the year, and there's a whole lot of areas where we once had three houses, we will now have seven or eight houses. It'll be more intensified, better quality houses, going back to our last discussion.
Yep.
You know, the old state houses were getting near the end of their life. These are warm, dry, presentable houses. But we've got to have the transport system, we've got to have the sewerage system, we've got to have the water system. And I've been doing a whole lot of work lately with Watercare, opening new stations, opening new biological nutrient removal so that our infrastructure can cope with intensive population growth. And, you know, those investments, and I give all credit to Watercare, we opened a new plant up in Warkworth last Friday. Why? Because Warkworth used to be 4,000 people in 2030.
Now it's 50 trillion.
Now it's 8,000, and by 2040 it'll be 35,000.
Right.
Now, you know, that means that you've got to have the infrastructure to cope with that growth. We're also launching new bus services up in Warkworth, and so you've got to have that transport so that people can get from where they live to where they work or where they study or where they enjoy their recreation.
All right, Phil, hey, great to talk to you. Talk to you again this time next week.
Okay, mate, have a good week.
Thanks.
And looks like some sunny weather for the weekend,
so
enjoy.
Treat yourself.
Okay.
See you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.